This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for being with us here on Tactics, where speech isn't violence, tolerance isn't love, and disagreement isn't hate. Thank you for being with us on this Thursday. Welcome into the program, as always, and we will have to cut it a little bit short tonight, but we're going to bring you a lot of information in a very short amount of time. We're going to do the best that we can here at Tactics because we know that's the reason that you're here. So let's go ahead and jump into, as we've started every single day since this outbreak started, the Alabama coronavirus update. Let's go to that right now. You can see from the Alabama Department of Public Health, they have their new numbers up. And as you can see there, look at that map. And we've got about 2,800 cases overall. We have 20,000 total tested, which is actually a little bit down from the other day. The deaths are about the same. In fact, they're exactly the same. We have not had any new deaths, at least in the past 24 hours. Now, the fact that 48 of our fellow Alabamians have passed is, of course, tragic and horrible, but we are intensely grateful to God that that is a number that has not gone up, at least not in the past 24 hours. And that was especially scary because you may remember we were on an upward trajectory. We were increasing every single day. We went from 5 new deaths to 7 new deaths to 9 new deaths in one day just the day before. And now we didn't have anybody pass away from it. So I don't know if the treatment got better. I don't know if they just happened to not have anybody pass away with completely that being a coincidence. Not really sure, but either way, that's really, really good news at a time that we need it. So one thing that I wanted to bring out, because I have not talked about this number really all that much, is the one that you see there down in the bottom right-hand corner, the hospitalizations, which I did praise them when they added that statistic, but I haven't done any commentary on it just because I haven't had a whole lot relevant to say. But the thing is that that's actually a very key part of this whole thing, and I'm going to explain to you why. So the reason that I haven't really brought it up yet is because it's not to a level where it needs to be of concern, and I'm going to explain about where that level is and where, if we do start seeing numbers approaching this number, maybe we do need to start taking into consideration what's going to happen. And I'm not saying we don't prepare for it now. I'm just saying that as far as just being observers, as people that can't really do a whole lot about it, at least right now from our quarantine caves, that's not really been something that has been necessarily newsworthy, the fact that we have 333 Alabamians currently hospitalized because of this. Now, it's important to note also that that is not a flat number. That's not a static statistic. And what I mean by that is that's not something that, as far as I understand, unless there is some kind of way that they're keeping track of this as well, that is not a thing that is going to be constant. Because you're going to have some people that are hospitalized and wind up leaving the hospital. Some of it's because they recovered. Some of it, unfortunately, is because they have passed away. But I want you to remember that just because you hit these numbers on this particular measuring unit, when you're looking at the website or looking at my online online report to explain it, if that number reaches the level to where our hospitals are completely overwhelmed, then it's not going to be reflected in real life. In other words, because there are going to be, hopefully, a lot of people that are out of the hospital by the time that we start seeing numbers approaching those levels. Reaching those levels doesn't necessarily mean that the hospitals are overwhelmed at that point, because that is a tally of the total number of people that have been hospitalized throughout the course of this thing. They're not bringing that number back down when patient A or patient B that was positive for COVID-19 leaves the hospital, whether they leave because they recovered or leave because unfortunately they passed away. That's not something that they're keeping track of right now. And I hope that they do wind up adding that rubric. They've added several different measures of this thing since the epidemic started. So hopefully they do add that. But it's important to remember that just because we hit a number that I say is going to be dangerous, which I'm going to present in a second, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're in the danger zone in real life. That's just a measure of how many people have been hospitalized to date, not the number of Alabamians that are currently in the hospital with COVID-19 at this second. So it's important to understand that distinction. So if you're looking at our current hospitalization rate, because you're looking at the 333 people that have been hospitalized out of the 2,800 confirmed cases, that leaves us with roughly, if you round up a little bit, about a 12% rate of all confirmed cases being hospitalized, which, you know, is scary. It's definitely something that you don't want, but 12% is a small percentage of the overall confirmed cases, and that's something to be, you know, optimistic about, because that means you see these scary big numbers, like, and we're going to see bigger ones before this is over. We're unfortunately probably going to see much bigger ones before this is over. If we're looking at about 3,000 Alabamians, just under 3,000 right now, if we're seeing that many Alabamians sick, but 88% of them are just staying home and recovering like it's just a really bad cold, that's really good. They don't need medical care. They're not being hospitalized. And a lot of the ones that are hospitalized, a large percentage of them, obviously not all of them, but a large percentage of them are recovering in a few days and being sent home. And so that is something that is really good. Now, UAB, you may remember, early on we did a report on UAB, and one of the things that they tweeted out saying that of the cases of the Wuhan flu that they were currently treating, about half of them needed ventilators. So if that is the case, then by using simple math, all we have to do is figure out at what level do we see hospitalization rates that we need to start worrying about and need to start looking into. At what point do our hospitals get overwhelmed and do not have adequate ventilators to be able to do that? Because that's going to be half of whatever the hospitalization rate is. And remember, like I said earlier, that's going to have to be people that are hospitalized right now, not just the raw number of total people that have been hospitalized the entire time this has been going on. So let's do a little simple math here. We currently have 800 available ventilators within the state of Alabama, and about 200 were requested from the National Strategic Stockpile. So that means we've got 800, we've requested 200, which I would imagine we're going to get, but we're going to deal with both of those numbers just as a rubric. So in order to keep our hospitalization to where it's at manageable levels and we're not losing people, because we're going to lose people because of this virus, and that's a horrible reality to have to deal with, but it's the way that things are. We've already lost people to this virus. We're going to continue to lose people to this virus, but what we really don't want, and this is the reason that we're flattening the curve, which is the very common talking point that we've got here. The reason that we're trying to flatten that curve is because we were worried that our hospitals would be wildly overworked, would not have enough beds, and they'd have to turn away people knowing that they're going to die just because they don't have the resources to deal with them. And the most precious resource, at least with this particular disease, is, of course, ventilators. So I say all that to say, if we currently have 800 ventilators in the state of Alabama with another 200 potentially on the way, then we need to keep our hospitalization rate to about 16,000 to 20,000 to avoid shortages. Because if 12% of those are going to be hospitalized, then that means that's about the levels that we need to keep it at, because remember, 16,000 to 20,000, that would be in keeping with the 800 to 1,000 ventilators we have available if those 200 come in from the National Strategic Stockpile. So that's the rate we need to keep it at. We need to keep it under 16,000 to 200, or sorry, 20,000. It'd be great if we could work with 200,000, but no, 20,000 to avoid those shortages. And if this 12% pattern holds, that means our total cases we need to keep to under about 133,000 to 167,000 total cases of COVID-19 cases confirmed. Now, this thing could shoot up really quickly. In fact, and I'm going to talk about that with our next graphic in a second, we've had more new cases today than we ever have in a single day looking at this thing since we've been tracking it. So there certainly it's certainly a possibility that we could reach these levels. This is by no means something that we should disregard just because the numbers don't look like this right now. But considering that we only have 2,800 cases at the moment, and we can probably, if those 200 ventilators come through, we can probably handle anywhere up to 167,000. That's actually pretty good news. Especially if you're looking at some of the newer parameters, some of the newer projections from people in Washington and within the state of Alabama as well, as to what this thing's actually going to look like, it looks like we're not going to have those shortages. Maybe we do. Maybe this thing winds up getting worse than we thought. Maybe when we do finally start letting everybody out, there's a resurgence of this thing and it winds up hitting us just as hard as if we had not done it to begin with. There's a number of possibilities, pretty much all of which would be horrible, so I'm hoping they do not come to pass. But there's a myriad of different possibilities that this thing could go, but as of right now, it looks like we're doing okay. And hopefully we will stay under that 133,000 mark. I mean, it'd be even better if we could probably handle 167,000 cases. But we really need to stay under that 130,000 mark. And remember, that would be at one time. Because there are now hundreds of people in the state of Alabama and even more across the country and the world that have recovered from this, and considering 88% of people don't even need hospitalization, they just recover from home, that gives us quite a bit of hope as well. And so hopefully we can keep the numbers under that, and we've done a pretty good job because, I mean, you're looking at 2,000 compared to 133,000. That's a long way to go. Now, granted, we could still get there. It's by no means something that is out of the question. I wouldn't even say that it is completely improbable, but what we're doing seems to be working, and it looks like we're going to be okay. And there's actually another reason that this may not be as big a concern as we originally thought, because of an X factor that has now entered into the equation that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. That's going to come in a few minutes, but I did want to get to one other statistic before we do that. So let's look at this. This is the new cases in Alabama that I was talking about. We did have the single biggest gain of any single day since this started. You can see there that the bar for today, April the 9th, is a little bit higher than we've seen for a couple of others. We've had 2 days that were pretty bad that are about the same. This is the thing that I really want to point out to you, though. You see, earlier in this graph, if you're looking at pretty much everything from March the 25th to really roughly about 3 or 4 days ago, you have some up and downs, and you have some days that there's a lot of new cases, but ultimately, you're kind of all over the map on that one. And that's one of the reasons that I was thinking that this thing may actually not spike. And maybe it still won't. There's still some reasons to believe that we're just going to get numeric increases as opposed to exponential increases. But you see how the past 4 days, when we're looking at new cases, has been an upward trajectory? You see, whereas everything before this was kind of all over the map, it goes up some days, it goes down some days we have more, some days we have less, that's not been the case for the past 4 days. And that is something that could be kind of scary. Because if that upward trajectory happens, and we are looking at something from 4 days ago where we had a day that was really not that big a deal, and how it's climbing and climbing at rates much higher than anything previously on that graph, there's a good chance that that means that the spike is coming pretty quickly. And now I've predicted a spike before. I actually predicted, ironically enough, a spike this past Saturday, and it wound up being the lowest day we'd had in like 2 weeks, because the Lord loves proving me wrong. It keeps me humble. But nonetheless, we really could see a spike, and that would be even more probable when you consider that everything from the past 4 days when it comes to new cases have been an upward trajectory, and that has not happened since we've been keeping track of this thing. We have that on the same day that we get not only an upward trajectory, but the single largest day that we've ever had in tracking this thing of new cases, this is a cocktail for disaster. I mean, just those factors coming together, that is not a good sign. And that's why I'm saying, even though it looks as though on the ventilator side we're going to be okay, and some of the new projections are very optimistic, and I want to point those out and, you know, laud them, but at the same time, we also have to remember that this thing could get out of control pretty quickly. And because of that, it's really good that we're keeping it relatively low, and it's really good that the new models are showing that we're probably going to be okay when it comes to resources. But now's not the time to rest on our laurels. We got to continue to remain vigilant. We got to keep the, you know, like I say at the end of every show, stay the course. And that's going to be something that serves us well. That upward trajectory is something that is of concern. Now, in other news going on with this virus here in the state of Alabama, there was a pretty significant debacle that even wound up making several national headlines with Alabama that I wanted to make you aware of. This is a headline from The Hill. Alabama removes controversial ventilator guidelines that denied coronavirus care to disabled. And this is how they start out. Alabama has removed controversial headlines regarding who should receive a ventilator in the event of a shortage, the Trump administration announced on Wednesday. Advocates had raised the alarm that the state's disaster preparedness plan would prioritize treatment of able-bodied individuals over people with physical and intellectual disabilities. A complaint was filed with the Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights. Responding to the HHS investigation, Alabama said the guidance was not in effect. The state had said that it has issued new guidelines and has completely disavowed the previous ones. Quote, "Every state should be aware that there are lines that should not be crossed," OCR Director Roger Severino said on a call with reporters. Alabama has incorporated a 2010 guidance for ventilator triage into its emergency preparedness plan. The criteria said that, quote, "Persons with severe mental retardation, advanced dementia, or severe traumatic brain injury may be poor candidates for ventilator support. Individuals with AIDS could have also been excluded," through the guidance noted that HIV is, quote, "not an automatic exclusion." So on that last part, I'll offer a little commentary. They're saying essentially that since it's not an automatic conclusion, that they are inferring from that, and it's not an unfair inference, that they could be excluded, but it's not something that you would automatically look at and go, okay, they can't get a ventilator in a time of crisis. So there's a couple things I want to bring up about this. First of all, I would be very interested to see the entirety of the document, and my automatic reaction to this, because I tend to be skeptical of things naturally, which is part of the reason that I'm good at my job, it seems as though we might be missing something, and especially since this would very easily and very well fit into a narrative that the national media would love to tell, I'm guessing there may be more to this story, but there may not be. And so that's one of the reasons that I do want to take this with at least a little grain of salt. But I'm going to give commentary based on the idea that this is correct, because based on the evidence supplied in this article, it seems pretty cut and dry that at least at some point, somebody in the state of Alabama had put this thing together specifically to try to have an automatic denial in a time of crisis where they were rationing out who gets a ventilator and who doesn't. People that are mentally handicapped, you heard the list just like I did, possibly people with AIDS, but definitely people that are mentally handicapped, people that have onset dementia, that kind of thing. So first of all, the first thing I notice and the first giant red flag that I see in this is that it says guidelines. Now, as somebody who does a pretty decent amount of poring over government documents and looking into things like this, you really need to understand the difference in a law and a guideline. Typically, what happens, and this is true at the federal level, unfortunately, it's true at the state level, also unfortunately, what normally happens is the legislature sort of defers itself. There's actually a legal doctrine that sort of underlies this called stare decisis. But it sort of defers its decision-making abilities to unelected bureaucrats in certain government agencies. It's a really stupid practice. It, first of all, sort of gives congressmen, the reason that they love it is because it gives them plausible deniability. A great example that I read in a book by Mike Lee at one point was tolls in New York City that had been raised to comply with a guidance from a organization within the Fed, and then that new toll was protested by the very congressman that voted to give the power to do that to the agency. So it was actually quite funny. But the point of all that is, what seems to have happened here, and maybe it's not, maybe it was something that went through the legislature, I don't know, but the way that it's worded, the sort of trappings of this, it makes it seem as though this was a guideline, not a law, and that probably means that some egg-headed bureaucrat at some point actually wrote this stuff down, made that the policy without actually going through the legislative process and having to pass it through Alabama's House and Senate and governor and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, this is the kind of stuff that you have to worry about when your Congress refuses to do its job. I understand the importance of bringing in experts in the field, because when it comes to this, we'll just there's a thousand different explanations for a thousand different experts, but we're going to use healthcare because that's the one we're dealing with right now. I get it. Your congressmen are not doctors. They need the advisement when it comes to lawmaking on matters like this of doctors, healthcare professionals, nurses, so on and so forth. They need that because they don't inherently have that expertise. I understand the need for that. This is not the way to do it. You need those experts to come in and assist you in writing the legislation and deciding whether or not the legislation is good or not and whether or not you're going to vote in favor of it or against it. You don't just defer it to a council of unelected experts to make their own decisions. That's not their job, and you're not doing your job. I would guess, and I don't know this for sure, so I want to hedge myself by saying that, but I would guess what happened is the legislature of Alabama sort of deferred those guidelines to be come up with one of our agencies, probably the Alabama Department of Public Health, though I'm not sure. And then they came out with these guidelines that didn't have to go through the legislative process, because I cannot imagine, from a political standpoint, somebody actually writing that into a law and then voting in favor of it. Because that would be political suicide, and this is one of the few times where our political system, when operating properly, would have actually fixed that issue. And public opinion having to come in on it, that's actually a time where it would have been something that is very, very helpful for the people to say, you better not do that. Because I can guarantee you, if this thing had gone through the normal legislative process, I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's incredibly unlikely that a senator or congressman would be willing to put their name to it. A bureaucrat that doesn't have to worry about that probably doesn't think twice about it. And that's one of the reasons that these things should be made by our elected lawmakers, not bureaucrats. Furthermore, this is exactly what Italy is doing now. Italy is rationing its medical devices, rationing its medical care for only those that meet its criteria. And by the way, I understand that they're in a crisis situation and they have to do that, but that's what socialized medicine gets you. In fact, because rationing is the norm, not even just something that happens in an emergency situation, it is the norm, the default, when it comes to socialized medicine. That's not only what's happening in Italy and Spain right now, but it's also what Obamacare architect Ezekiel Emanuel was pushing for in his complete live system. He was advocating for that, and that the American system should move to that always on a permanent basis, because we would have nationalized healthcare where everything had to be rationed, because you don't have a free market system. It's decided based on the government, not on the doctors and the patients. And also, what's really horrifying to think about is it's also what the Nazis did. You may recall that the Nazis, the very first victim of Nazism were not Jews, were not gypsies, were not gays, were not Christians, all of whom were persecuted by the Nazis later. No, 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 the first victim of Nazism was baby Naur, a child that was severely mentally and physically handicapped, and they basically made the case that it would be the compassionate thing to go ahead and kill that person. This is straight up eugenics, deciding that the mentally handicapped and people with dementia and people with onset Alzheimer's, that those are the people that automatically, no, you don't even get looked at. If you've got that, you're not getting a ventilator. And it happened in Alabama. Guys, we've got a severe problem here, and we need to figure out where that came from. I don't know where it came from. It happened back in 2010. I'm not sure. Maybe they were following Ezekiel Emanuel's advice, the guy who, you know, one of the people who wrote Obamacare. I don't know if he was getting it from there or somewhere else, but either way, there needs to be a head to roll, or probably several in this case, when it comes to this thing, because we can't be putting up with stuff like this. We can't adopt Nazi policies, literal Nazi policies, in the state of Alabama. That is a bridge way yonder too far. So far, you can't even see it at this point, and I am absolutely furious about this. This is actually worse than death panels. Because you remember back when Obamacare came out, a big conservative talking point that was laughed off as being ridiculous, even though it was actually written into the policy, written into the system, was we were talking about death panels. Well, at least with a death panel, the people on the death panel might decide to save you. With this, it's an automatic, nope, you're just not going to get it because you have Alzheimer's or because you have whatever. I'm flabbergasted that this could happen in the state of Alabama. But that's what's going on. Now, hopefully, since we've already gotten rid of it and it's not something that's in place right now, it doesn't appear as though it's going to be something that actually affected somebody's life. But wherever that leak is that came from, we better find that and patch it up real fast. And there's a lot of people with a lot of spare time on their hands right now. That needs to be something that Alabama lawmakers are focusing on and getting that figured out. All right, well, I do have a Bible study that is actually starting here in just a minute, so I've got to go because I'm hosting it, but I do appreciate it, and I will try to be back on. We're trying to get everything together to do Friday shows from now on. We'll be doing the Geekend again tomorrow. Got my buddies together to do that, so we will see you then. In the meantime, stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.